And good Wednesday morning.
Blog Talk Radio.
Central Alternative Talk AM 1150 traffic update for Around the Sound. Well, we have a recent collision on I-5 northbound on Mile Post 139 near Porter Way earlier this morning. It's still blocking to the left lane. In response, the State Patrol have been dispatched to the scene to take care of that situation and get it cleaned up. Stay tuned. Coming up next, after the news weather, it's the Dr. Pat Show being brought to you by Transformation Talk Radio Network.
NBC News Radio, I'm Brad Siegel. The risk of severe storms is expected to continue across the Deep South today. NBC's Morgan Chesky reports on the aftermath of tornadoes that already left a trail of destruction in the South yesterday.
Here in Texas, damage extensive. Some buildings gutted or reduced to nothing but bricks, all from a storm system that today is far from over.
He says officials in Louisiana are reporting dozens of people injured and at least two dead, including a boy and his mother. At least seven people were injured in Texas. Today is the 10-year anniversary of the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting in Connecticut. 20 first graders and six educators lost their lives in Newtown after being killed by a lone gunman. To honor their memory, President Biden is declaring today a day of remembrance. Mortgage application volume is on the rise. They increased just over 3% last week. That came as the average 30-year rate barely moved. More homeowners are looking to refinance. Brad Siegel, NBC News Radio.
Hey, cheese lovers. Save big at Whole Foods Market during the 12 Days of Cheese. Get 37% off select holiday cheeses with Prime through December 24th. While supplies last. Shop in-store or online. Terms apply.
And let's go ahead and take a look now for Alternative Talk weather. I look for Wednesday. Well, we'll see mostly cloudy skies, then gradually becoming sunny later on this afternoon. High temperatures around 40, 41 degrees. Tonight, partly cloudy skies, low temperatures dropping down to freezing, 32 degrees. For Thursday and for Friday, more sunshine expected. High temperatures, not any warmer, in the low 40s, with low temperatures through the overnight in the upper 20s to low 30s, with a chance of rain and snow mix beginning on Saturday and running through the weekend. Highs of around 40.
The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. This program is sponsored by Dr. Pat Vasily and Transformation Talk Radio.
She's the pushy broad from the Bronx, New York. Follow her voice, the stray dog is high. She's the pushy broad from the Bronx, oh yeah. Don't be surprised if you want to listen twice. Make decisions, find the right choice. Know yourself better, find your own voice. It's okay if you need help today, because everybody needs a little push. From the pushy broad from the Bronx, New York. That's it,
There we go. Welcome, Transformation Talk Radio listeners. My name is Ellen Stewart, and I am the pushy broad from the Bronx. Welcome to my show, Recovery Recharged, with my illustrious co-host, Dr. Pat. How you doing, Doc?
I'm really excited about this show because whenever there are stories about people that rise up, whenever there are stories about surrender, whenever there are stories about graciously recovering or not so graciously recovering, I get so excited about it. And, you know, Ellen, what you're doing today and who we're speaking with today is so needed today. It's hard to even find the words anymore to say how much we need the message from our very featured guest today.
Absolutely. And the compassion and the fortitude that this best-selling New York Times author displays is absolutely unparalleled. We have a very special guest today, New York Times best-selling author Judy Mandel. She talks about her new memoir, White Flag, which is on Amazon, available to you, in which she seeks to understand the nature of addiction while she struggles to save her beloved niece to fulfill the deathbed promise that she made to her sister. And it is just that compelling. I could not put it down. There are so many questions and so many things we're going to talk about to Judy today. I just want to give you a little bit of a background into her bio. She is a former reporter and a marketing executive. After the death of her parents, she knew that it was time to write the story of her family's emotional and physical survival. and it tells of a devastating plane crash that killed an older sister and left a remaining sister critically burned and close to death. Her first New York Times bestseller was Replacement Child. It is that story. And now she comes across with her second book, her second memoir called White Flag. It's related to her first book, and she's going to tell us how, as she becomes aware of the tentacles of transgenerational trauma stemming from the family tragedy. So we have so much to talk about today and so much to get to with this powerful, powerful book. Welcome to Transformation Talk Radio and my show, Recovery Recharged. Judy Mandel, how are you this morning?
I'm good. Thanks so much for having me, Ellen. It's nice to see you, and Pat, nice to see you too.
It's great to have you. Thank you so much. Let's start by just telling our listeners a little bit about your first book, Replacement Child, because it directly relates to White Flag. So can you give us a background?
Yeah, sure. It's really the story of my family's survival, as you were saying. And it's about a plane crash in 1952 in Elizabeth, New Jersey. And that plane took the top off of the apartment building they were living in and dumped jet fuel into my mother's kitchen. And it was on fire. My sister, Donna, unfortunately, was trapped there. My mother saved three people that day, though. I'd like to, you know, point that out. My mother's kind of my hero. She saved another girl who was visiting Donna, and she saved her own mother, and she saved my sister Linda, who was only 2 years old and was enveloped in flames. I rolled her down the stairs and got her out before the building collapsed right after that. So the way it relates to that is that Linda is the mother of Cheryl, who's featured in White Flag. And, you know, as I did my research into transgenerational trauma, I realized that trauma doesn't go away, that it's with the family, really through the generations. And the awareness of it is important to know. So that's how that relates. That's the thread.
That's how the books are connected.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
And tell us a little bit more about White Flag, why that title, because it means a lot to a lot of people, and it certainly means something to us in recovery.
Yeah.
So why the title White Flag?
Sure. Well, you know, as you pointed out, you know, White Flag is, you know, the universal sign of surrender. And for me, the title came about first as this was the only way I could find a bed for my niece when she was homeless. And they had a white flag event that they call it when the weather is inclement and they open up their doors and all the shelters, even if they don't have a bed. And that's the way she found a bed in that last winter, really, of her life in Louisville, Kentucky, where I found that there are many more beds for men than there are for women, which is, I think, an important point, too. The other part of white flag is that someone with substance use disorder needs to surrender themselves to the fact that they need help. And the white flag symbolizes that for me, that she had to raise her own white flag. And the third part of that is that I had to raise my own white flag of what I could and could not do for her. So that's the way that came about.
It's such a difficult thing for us to understand how much we can help and how much we can't help. That surrender and the whole idea of that in recovery is really an important concept. Was that an important concept for you, Dr. Pat?
Yeah, and what I want to say, thank you so much for sharing this story, because it's a story that is rarely told. It is the untold story. It's what I call the invisible trauma. Multi-generational trauma is invisible trauma. Somehow we think that, oh, we're going to pop out a new kid. It's going to be a new generation, and we're all good. We're going to be all good. Those of us that are from that experience, no, we're not all good. And, you know, the secrets of past generations is so deadly. But what you're doing is you're telling the story. You're sharing. You're allowing people that are sitting here listening to this show that are thinking, oh, my goodness, that sounds like my family. That sounds like me. We're not allowed to talk about it. We were not allowed to talk about my mom's suicide. And for a really long time, nobody told us what it was. But this is what this is the important is. It is the white flag, Ellen, you said so beautifully, and Judy so beautifully. It is the white flag of surrender on the outside and on the inside, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's absolutely true. And when you talk about, you know, not talking about things in a family, I like to say that, you know, silence is its own trauma in a family. You know, not talking about things, and I know I was certainly felt bad in my family. They didn't talk about that accident. They didn't talk about what happened to one sister and that the other sister was so challenged. It was never talked about. And I know that visited to Cheryl, too, in her life, you know, with her mother's own struggles.
What I have gleaned from this book is the fact that you were relentless in asking what was going on and trying to find the answers. And that's something that is really courageous and powerful, because knowing what's going on, even though you may not be able to help, but knowing what's going on so that not only can you reconcile it in your own brain, but you can share it with the world, is a very powerful thing. So going with you through every single aspect of what was happening to her, and not only that, but what was happening to you at the time, the questions that were running through your mind were universal questions, I can tell you, that everybody asked. All right, so we really appreciate this kind of thing. But when you talk about white flag as well, you talk about the fact that in order to raise the white flag, one must acknowledge that they need help. And then you talk about the difficulty it is for people to ask for help. So why do you think that is, Judy?
I think some of it is the language that we use, that it instills stigma and shame in people, that they don't want to come forward. So this is one reason that I try to use the word substance use disorder instead of addiction and addict, which have so much shame attached to them. And I think that you know, releasing some of that shame helps people come forward and realize that they are deserving of help, that they need help. And, you know, opening things up to harm reduction, you know, services also helps with that.
Yeah.
So I think it's a shame why people don't come forward.
Yeah. I'm going to ditto that. And I love that, because you notice we use the word recovery to be very broad. And, you know, we're trying to overturn, oh, my God, how many decades, like 1930s, you know, of this idea of I'm an addict. You know, it's a stigma that's on top of a stigma that gets stigmatized inside your family and outside. I mean, it is a whole cycle and a dynamic that you just talked about.
Yeah. And, you know, even the word addict, you know, I kind of go into this in the book a little bit. The word comes from, you know, being slave, and, you know, in every sense of the word. And just telling someone that makes them feel worthless. And I know my niece Cheryl felt that way. You know, I could see it in every letter that she sent me from when she was in jail. Every letter she sent me, it talked about how she was unworthy and undeserving. And, you know, I tried to bolster her against that feeling that she had.
You know, you're onto something, because I did a little deep dive, you know, wow, like a number of years ago, right, Ellen? Because yeah. I found it interesting we use this language, and now with the digital world, we're not just using it. You know, it's almost, you know, it's almost like coming out as being gay, like that was fashionable. So this seems to be a little bit fashionable, but yet there's so much to learn about it. And here's what I discovered. You can't find the word addict or addiction very much in the literature. You can go back to Marty Mann, and you can go back to even the way these organizations were named. They weren't named Addiction Anonymous, right? Were they?
No, they were not.
But somehow it became very fashionable to use this. Now, I want to clarify for everybody listening. I do not undermine the power of addiction. I don't. Nicotine, like right at the top of the list, everybody. But when you label yourself as a thing, then how do you undo that label? And I think that's part of what we're talking about, because guilt and shame, Judy, I just want to get back to this, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
Guilt and shame are the two peas in the pod of living a life of despair. They are right in there. They gnaw at you. It is like getting a thorn or a splinter in your finger that you just can't find and get rid of. And yet, after time, you're so focused on it that it's hard to shake. Is that what you found, Judy?
Yeah, I think that is the crux of why people don't look for help or realize that they're worth the help. And, you know, I think this is also one reason why, even at the needle exchanges, that they find, you know, even going for that bit of help and seeing that people aren't judging them and are just there to help them, helps people reach out for more help to recover.
And what's hopeful, and what we see as hopeful now, especially in talking to young people and working with young people in recovery and having young people talk about how they are helping themselves, is to say that I am not my disease. I am in recovery, and I am proud to be in recovery, which is saying to the world, just like Pat and I have said to the world many, many times, that we are not the product of something negative and harsh and harmful and that stigma, but we are the product of strength and hope and sharing that strength and hope across, you know, many multiple platforms, which is why we do this show. And I know that it was something hard for you too, because when Dr. Pat talks about shame and guilt, it's not only the shame and guilt that was brought upon by the person that is struggling to be in recovery, but it's the shame and guilt that you mentioned you went through as the person trying to help the
sure.
person in that struggle. And not only did you do that because she was your niece, but because you made a promise to your sister. So tell us about that.
Well, when my sister was dying, she died of lung cancer. When she was dying, I said to her, and she has two daughters, and I said, don't worry, you can go. I'm going to take care of them. You know, I've got them. And so, you know, that certainly I thought about that the whole time that Cheryl was in trouble at the last part of her life. And wanted to do everything I could. That's the kind of promise you need to keep, and that's what motivated me a lot.
Mm.
It's true.
Well, Cheryl's story was certainly a powerful one, and you tell it in a very compelling way. You talk about her Facebook posts, which are extremely powerful. People should see the kind of person she was talking to you about on the outside, and then trying to get clues as to what was actually going on with her on the inside.
That was one of my purposes, to have those Facebook posts and her actual letters that she wrote me.
Yes.
Is to bring forward, you know, the person that she was.
Yeah.
And she, like you say, she was not her addiction, her substance use disorder. It's like looking at somebody with a disease like diabetes. And, you know, my hope is that we change that perception.
I'm so glad you said that, Judy, and I'm so glad you did it. Here's why. I interview a lot of people, Ellen knows this, and I am like the last one to sit down and want to write a book, but I'm getting a lot of interest from publishers to write on my topic, Broken Promises. I've studied it for 10 years. But part of that is the disclosure of my mom's letters to my dad when she was in Bellevue after her first suicide attempt. Now, how did I get the letters? My stepmom. The guilt and shame for my sister over that incident, who's 12 years older than me, had my stepmom had to wait till my dad died. My dad died. He had thrown them in the garbage. She pulled them out, and she kept them until my dad died and then gave them to me. And that led me on a journey to find out what happened to her, because all we knew was she died in a fire. We didn't know she started the fire. But the guilt and shame that my sister carried, 12 years older than me, watching a woman that couldn't take care of herself, on drugs, alcohol, I wish I understood it better. I wish I could have helped my sister, because it ultimately killed her. And that's why I appreciate what you're doing, because I was not going to put the letters in my book until I read your book.
That's a very powerful thing, and Judy has discovered it in so many different ways. I want to talk just a little bit about how the book opens up, because it's a really powerful beginning. You talk about writing to her, discovering her in prison. That must have been really overwhelming for you. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
It was. You know, it was actually my sister Linda's birthday, and I was thinking about her and her daughter, Cheryl, who I hadn't heard from in 2 years. I didn't know where she was. I was afraid that she had died. I thought she was certainly on the streets. I didn't know anything. So I Googled her name, and she popped up with a mugshot that she was in an Ohio prison. And I wrote to her there and, you know, wondered if I would hear back from her, and it took a couple of weeks. And I did hear back from her, and that started our correspondence. But I don't think I was able to find her before that. I think there was something different in the way they listed people in prison. But there she was, and it was two things at the same time. It was first a relief. Oh my gosh, she's alive. And, you know, maybe she's safe. Right this minute, she's safe. And the other was, oh my God, she's in prison, you know. So it was a dual reaction that I had.
Well, I commend you, first of all, for not running from that, because it's a very scary thing to turn around and say, oh, my God, my niece is in prison. I don't want to have anything to do with it. That is very common for many people to think that way. But to turn around and to continuously correspond with her, to help her, to give her some money in the commissary so that she can feel a little bit more self-respect and self-worth, and to continue that relationship with her, gave her hope. And I think it gave you hope, too. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, I did talk to some friends. I talked to a friend who's a social worker, and she said it's really important you put money in the commissary. I was worried about that. Should I do that? I wasn't sure. And she said, yes, it's very important, you know, that they know somebody cares about them. And certainly that had a big effect on her. I sent her books, and we could talk about them. She was a voracious reader, and we talked about the books. And I talk about that in the book, too, you know, which books I sent her and why I thought I would send her those books. And, I'm glad we had that. We had a relationship again, which I was grateful for. I was very grateful for that.
Judy, I have a question for you, because here's what I'm struck by, and I don't know the answer to it. You know, when I look at the books and I read the books and get to know you here today, there is a question. I would love to know how this journey, first book, second book, how the journey changed you.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, my first book was a journey of understanding who I was, and that I, you know, it's called Replacement Child, and I was writing the book for at least a year before I came upon that term, replacement child. They call it a syndrome, that was noted in, like, 1964. And so, you know, I came upon that, and I realized that so many of those features applied to me. And I thought, well, how am I a replacement child? Why didn't that dawn on me that I was the replacement for my sister who died? It was only within another year that my mother had me, and certainly it made so much sense. So that was a journey in itself. With White Flag, it was a journey to really understand substance use disorder, which I didn't understand, and understanding how it led back to my past and my niece's past, and how that is all interrelated, and how so many things make it a complex disease.
Wow. So when you're, the one thing that impressed me is you kept asking Cheryl, you kept being extremely hopeful, you kept saying to her, you know, why don't you try this and why don't you try that, and I'll help you find a place to live, I'll help you find treatment, all of these things. And she said, of course, what everybody said to me who starts recovery coaching, meetings aren't for me, I've got a handle on this, I don't really need them. I just know I'll never go back to doing drugs again. So as a person who is approaching this as a parent, as an aunt, as a concerned woman, did you really believe everything she was saying at the time, or did your gut instinct get the better of you here?
That part worried me a lot, that she wouldn't try the things that were accessible to her at that time. I think things have changed a bit since that time. This was 2017.
Yeah.
And there are more things available, you know, medically assisted treatment and more social services, I think. I'm not sure about where she was in Kentucky, but the fact that she had these meetings available, especially in prison, and in, you know, the halfway house that she was in for a while, and she wouldn't take advantage of those. And part of it was the religious aspect that she bristled against. That did worry me quite a bit that she said she wouldn't do that. But I have to say, I listened to her. She said, I'm never going back to that. That's not part of the problem. I wish, this is one thing I do wish that I had done, is go there at that point and given her a drug test so she couldn't deny it, because she was still using and, of course, lied to me about that.
Dr. Pat, do you find that today, I mean, all of the stuff that we do in the past 3 years in this show, and you and I, of course, are avid 12-steppers, do you find that the 12-step modality in your personal work and everybody you talk to is evolving, or do you find that people are using other methods to stay clean?
No. COVID was the greatest gift to addiction you can imagine. It was the best and the worst gift to anybody in recovery, substance abuse, any kind of abuse, anything you want to talk about. Now, why do I say that? Ellen knows this about me. I have been GSR. I have been representative of tri-state, multiple state parts of boards. I am a Marty Mann fan because she did not pay attention to the guidelines of Alcoholics Anonymous, and she went on television and she talked about it. She set up her own organization. So here's what COVID did. I know I'm excited, right? I can't tell you how many conference meetings of those organizations I presented a package that said online meetings work. They are safe. Deaf ears. Right? Anonymous. COVID comes. What did we do, Ellen?
Online meetings. They work.
That was the greatest savior for people. People came to meetings that never went to in-person meetings. If you didn't like the spiritual tone and you did not want to say the Our Father, like one of the meetings I went to in Jersey, you can go to the meetings here in Seattle. Spiritual, not religious. You can go to meetings. I went to meetings in Belgium. I went to meetings in Germany. It let Pandora out. And that is a genie that cannot go back. So for me, when we're talking about this now, when we're talking about the time you were at, it was not available.
No.
You couldn't talk about it. Ellen and I, we decided we're just going to do a show. And it's not just her and I. I have got Ellen, I've got Kelly Bazzani, I got Susan Dene, and they have come out of the box, and we are talking about this. But something about what happened in COVID energized us. I don't know, Ellen. I don't know how to explain it any better.
No, I think you're absolutely right, and we're going to talk much more about all of this and much more about Judy's book. And also, we want to hear from Judy as to how she feels about how treatment is going and the observations that she's made considering her niece's, you know, situation. And we want her to talk with other parents and other people who are really struggling with the same thing.
How do we find out more about Judy and her book?
How do we get a copy of her book?
You can go to judymandel.com or you can go to Amazon and look up Judy Mandel White Flag. You can go into your local bookstore and ask for it. White Flag is the name.
Yeah, I'm going to answer this text. Marty Mann, look it up. Marty Mann is not a man. Marty Mann is a woman. Google Marty Mann. You can Google the television show I've Got a Secret, where they had to find the addict out of the three people and never thought it was her. The alcoholic out of the three people. She was on the television show from back in the day, you know, What's My Secret? And the question was, which one of you three is an alcoholic? Let's take a short break. When we're back, no more secrets.
From the pushy broad from the Bronx, New York.
can't just fix yourself on the outside and expect the inside to follow. Whether you're 5 or 85, healthy living can begin whenever you decide you want a better life. Tune into Keeping Up with Barbara Scheidegger every month on TransformationTalkRadio.com to learn about implementing a daily routine and finding a balance to improve your life. Learn to live agelessly. Go to BarbaraScheidegger.com. That's Barbara, S-C-H-E-I-D-D-G-G-E-R.com.
Are you looking for a way to break old habits that are holding you back from reaching your true potential and living the life you deserve? Well, look no further than Dr. Loretta Phillips. She is a clinician and a relationship and mental health coach that will assist you with reaching your purpose. She will hold you accountable so that your desires are now a reality. Connect with Dr. B at CultivatingYourLife.com and find your path today. That's CultivatingYourLife.com.
Hi everyone, I'm Dr. Pat. I'm the host of the Dr. Pat Show, and I am the creator of the Transformation Network, doing what we do in the world of positive radio, informed, educated, positive media. Independent radio hosts and independent networks have been the face of positive messaging over the past decade. So all of us here have decided we're going to put together an independent network that is going to enable people to bring their positive message of hope, inspiration, and conscious action to the forefront. Help us create a future of amazing, uplifting stories that can be told so we can tell our children and they can tell their children of what hope and conscious action is all about. I want to thank you all for tuning us in, turning us on TransformationTalkRadio.com. It is time to get inspired to take action in your life. Tune in to Emotional Elevation with me, Susan Denae. We are identifying, understanding, and treating our crazy one episode at a time. We all have crazy in our lives. The thing that sets us apart is how we deal with it. And I've got you covered. Enjoy your journey. You are worth it. Visit SusanDenae.com. That's D-E-N-E-E.com.
What if you could enter a sacred vortex of love and beauty, infused with the power of the earth and ascended masters?
Join myself, Dr. Georgia Herrera and Dr. Sharon Martin, in the Sacred Master Show.
Bring in the mystical and sacred for healing, airing every third Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. You too can have your health and life challenges melt away.
Join now and feel your heart open up to the answers to your most important questions.
From the pussy broad from the Bronx, New York.
Okay, I just got to say it before you say anything. Every time I hear that, it brings me back to my childhood in the Bronx. And Betty, am I allowed to mention this? White Castle hamburgers.
Oh, my God.
Oh my God.
I can't believe you said White Castle hamburgers
on
Allison Avenue in the Bronx.
Well, there was one in Elizabeth, New Jersey, too, that we
got. Yes, there was. Yes, I'm a Jersey girl. I drive over to Plainfield.
It still is.
Really? Every time I say
we
that.
We stop there all the time.
I remember that as the first fast food place. We even have home movies about us being at White Castle. It was such a big thing. When they used to come out to us on roller skates and put
Absolutely.
The sprays on the windowsills, okay? So now that everybody knows that we're both 100, we're all 150 years old, we'll continue onward. Oh, my goodness. This is Ellen Stewart. I am the Pushy Broad from the Bronx. I'm here with Dr. Pat. I'm here with Judy Mandel. We're talking about her very, very interesting book called White Flag. I do need to tell you that as a recovery coach, especially this time of year, if you are struggling, if you need help, if you are like Judy and are a parent or a loved one concerned about what's happening to your loved one this time of year, I need you to call me at 800-889-1757. If you're in the United States, if you are abroad, go to pushybroadfromthebronx.com. Make a free appointment with me to have an initial consultation. I will give you resources. I will help you, especially during this time of year. And now that everybody thinks there's no more COVID, everybody's out, everybody's partying, everybody's doing the kinds of things that get them into trouble this time of year. So just know that I'm here for you as a recovery coach, and I will certainly help you get through this difficult time. So, and you can find Judy's book, as she said, on Amazon.com.
Or go to her website.
Judy Mandel.
Judy Mandel.
Yes.
Also, if you all want to call in, I thank you. I did get your text message. I'm going to give out the call-in number. 1-800-930-2819 is the call-in line to this show right now. 1-800-930-2819. If you are not listening to this show live and you have a question, you can still dial that number, and our producers will pick it up, and they will get the message to Judy or Ellen. 1-800-930-2819. Okay, sorry. Just want to say
that's
that.
Okay. All right. So, Judy, first of all, I found it interesting that you take this book, White Flag, and you label it an investigative memoir, okay, rather than just a novel. Can you tell us why you call it that?
Because I think it's more investigative than it is memoir, that I did so much research, and actually the bibliography is probably, you know, a resource that is very helpful to people trying to find the answers to those questions that we all have. You know, why did they become, you know, addicted to drugs? You know, why did they start using drugs? Why couldn't they stop when you know that they wanted to stop? These were all the questions that I had. And, you know, there aren't easy answers to any of those questions, as you know. It's very complex, and for each person it's different. And I think the investigative part was the reading and research and talking to people that I did. And I felt like that was even more of the book than my piece.
You know, I just saw something on Disney that I have to call your attention to because it goes to this message. There is a movie on the Disney Channel called Spirited. It is now with Ryan Reynolds and Will Ferrell. And what it is about is, can someone be redeemed? Can they change? Is it possible for someone, and Will Ferrell is Scrooge, is it possible for Scrooge to change? Can people change? Can they be redeemed? So based on your book, Judy, and based on what you've learned, do you think it's possible at any age to actually fix and change your life?
I think so. I believe that. I believe people can change. You know, my son's a social worker, so we talk about this a lot. And he says to me, you know, I couldn't be in this business if I didn't believe people could change and that, you know, I could help them. And he sees and I see people change all the time. And I believe it. Even with, you know, brain chemistry, with substance use, I believe that can be reversed with certain lifestyle changes as well. And be awareness of what goes into this complexity, I believe is part of the answer. So yeah, I absolutely believe at any age.
Dr. Pat, this is the age-old question. Is it a fix or a change? What do you think?
I think it's a transformation. I think when you take this journey, it's a transformation. Whether you succeed in terms of language or pass-fail, whether you think you passed or failed, you are transformed. It doesn't matter, because the experience, just the acknowledgement that your life is a mess and you want to do something about it, even if you don't get to what that end game is, it's transformation. It screams in the 9-step promises. I couldn't read the steps. I had to memorize the promises. I had to hold on to them because that was the only thing I could hold on to. If you told me that I would have this freedom, that I would not be baffled anymore. If you promised them to me, the fact that they called them promises, hello, right? But you will be transformed. Just like Judy, everything in the book is transformative. Your life is transformative. What you're doing to help people is transformative. What you're doing, Ellen, is the same thing. I have a network called the Transformation Network, Transformation Talk Radio. Why? Because I see my life as that. I never thought I'd be here today talking to you two. And honestly, in my high school book, they basically, when they found me for the high school reunion, they said to me one thing, is this really you? Are you Pat Vasily from Plainfield High School? I said, yes. They said, you're not dead.
Yeah.
I'm not dead, no. He said, we thought by now you'd be dead. We knew you were homeless, but we thought for sure you'd never get your act together. I did.
If Judy's book is any indication, Dr. Pat, you have to absolutely write your memoir. There's no question.
I was going
to
say, I want to read your book.
There you go.
I want to read your book.
There you go.
You know, it's always hardest to tell our own story, though, isn't it?
You know, you're doing a great job of it, and I'm very, very glad that Recovery Recharged over the past 3 years has given you an open platform to
it
do
has.
That.
Yeah. Never we, talked about it before.
I know.
20 years, Judy.
I know.
20 years old, and I couldn't talk about I didn't know how.
Sure.
So I am thrilled that I've been able to make it available to you to talk about it so we can talk about it together, because I know you've said things here that you've not said anywhere else. Judy, I know that you felt that too in this book, and there are some surprising revelations that have come out of this story for you. So can you talk a little bit about some of the things you've learned that will help our audience?
Sure. Well, like I was saying before, the complexity was of substance use disorder was certainly something I did not understand. How, you know, even when you if you start young, the brain chemistry changes so much that it's harder and harder to stop. You know, the metaphor that I liked that I found was you're careening down a hill in a car, you're about to go off the cliff, and you're putting your foot on the brake, and you're pounding on the brake, but the brake doesn't work. And I keep feeling like that was Cheryl, that she wanted to stop. She kept putting her foot on the brake, but she didn't have the capacity to do that. And the understanding of what that does to your brain was an essential part for me, you know, understanding. Mm-hmm. You know, tied in with she had depression. That was part of it. I found out there was sexual abuse in her childhood, which I believe was also another piece of the puzzle that I thought might have happened, but I found out it was absolutely true. And so that coupled with the generational trauma, you know, with her mom and our family, it was almost too much. It was too much. It was too much for me to tackle without even knowing what I was up against. And I wish that she had known more about it. I don't think she was aware of hardly any of this.
Yeah. Were you from the old school where so many people say that because they didn't understand addiction, you felt that maybe she just wasn't strong enough to overcome it, or you didn't realize that all these factors were contributory to it? I mean, where were you before?
Absolutely, in the beginning, that's true. And especially, you know, I only knew a fraction of what my sister went through with Cheryl and her substance use. Disorder over the years. I wasn't aware of all of the rehabs that she had been sent to until later when I was, you know, researching the book. I wasn't aware that she had been in prison before, in jail at least. There were so many factors that I just was not aware of. I know my sister at one point said, I can't do anything anymore. And she kind of shut her out, which was, you know, the old way of tough love. And you know, now I realize, and back then I thought, well, maybe you have to do that. Now I think that is totally the wrong way to approach this at all. That, you know, tough love, letting somebody hit bottom could be they're going to die. And I think keeping people alive is much more important than that.
Yeah.
Just keep them alive until they either wave their own white flag. And as long as they're alive, there's hope.
Yeah. There's a very fine line, isn't there, Dr. Pat, between, like what Judy said, this is a conversation in itself, and we'll go into it a little bit more, but the difference between tough love and enabling. Yeah?
It's a very fine line, but here's what you know. It was going to be an uphill battle anyway, because you're talking about a couple of states, whether it's Tennessee, West Virginia, or Alabama.
Kentucky, Mississippi, right.
Here's the news flash for everybody. Whenever you say which states in the United States, like, are up there, everybody wants to say New York. They're not even in the top 20. And so your point, Judy, about the situation, but where this was happening was in a place that you could not be in front of drugs. And the numbers are startling, and they've gotten worse. I mean, you're talking about, like, Alabama, 98 retail opioid pain relief prescriptions per 100 people. I mean, 51.5 drug overdose deaths in West Virginia. I mean, you're talking about numbers that nobody wants to talk about. And the shocker is Vermont. So when you look at these, and you look at my state, Washington State, and you think, like, we're the first to legalize marijuana, first to legalize domestic partnerships and marriage. Our governor did both in 1 year. We're not even on the list. So people that live in those places, they don't have the access that we're talking about here. And every street corner, you know what I'm trying to say.
I think the important part is to make treatment more accessible than the drugs.
Absolutely. Right? And in the states I'm mentioning, it's not.
And in Kentucky, where Cheryl was, you know, when I started to try to find her a bed, you know, in a shelter, and I found, and I later went to the shelter that she was at, the Salvation Army, and I saw, you know, all these beds for men and this tiny little alcove for women. And, you know, I said, what is this about? And that was the case in the whole state.
And I understand, but, you know, there is also a class system in treatment, too, and these are the things that we're going to break wide open when it comes to the new network at TTR, because if you have the money or if you have good insurance, you get a certain kind of treatment, and if you don't have the money and you don't have good insurance, you get another kind of treatment, and it's a very, very difficult situation to process, and more and more resources are now beginning to be developed to help people.
Yeah.
And even though your story was back in, what, 2017, Judy, 2017, it's only been 5 years, but it has vastly changed in this arena. And so many things are popping up in a really good way. But the thing that I think that families and parents and people like you have to understand is that there is such a thing as dual diagnosis. It may not always be the addict that is only worried about whether or not they want to pick up a drink or a drug. It comes from the things that you listed. It comes from epigenetics. It comes from the transgenerational trauma. It comes from the brain chemistry, originally. It comes from the fact that effective rehabilitation for her was very scarce. And you also talked about a failing prison system, and you also talked about big pharma flooding the communities with opioids. So just touch on that for a second. What did you find out?
Well, I did find out that, you know, it was certainly a period of time when, we'll go back to fentanyl, was part of the picture in Kentucky. People were dying in droves in Kentucky at that moment in time. Fentanyl was in every drug they were finding, and it was certainly in hers, you know, from the autopsy report. Big pharma, you know, flooding. There's no way that those drugs didn't find their way to the street. Well, we know that. Even, you know, I even know that, you know, one of the people that I interviewed that was a friend of Cheryl's said that her and her boyfriend were crushing up, you know, oxy pills and, you know, snorting those as their drug. And so it was out there. It was, you know, definitely out there. Epigenetics is a fascinating topic that's a little bit, you know, hard to explain and understand, which I... You know, I try to do that. I actually have my stepson is a neurobiologist, and he's a professor, and he explained it to me about how DNA can, it's not the DNA that gets passed down, it's the way that it reacts. And he has a way of explaining it as balls of yarn, and the balls of yarn are connected, you know, by one yarn. And you can change the way the behaviors from those DNA balls of yarn react. So it's not something that can't be changed. Even epigenetics can be changed from, you know, by lifestyle changes. And transgenerational trauma also. I mean, just the awareness and being, you know, cognizant of where that behavior comes from is so important. You mentioned dual diagnosis, and my niece was diagnosed with depression, I think, just in jail. That was the first time, and we were able to get her some medicine while she was in the Ohio jail. But when she went to Kentucky, they didn't have it. They didn't give it to her. And so she went, you know, right back down. And it was a struggle each time. The prison system is something that really riles me, because there was a time they wouldn't let me send her books, for heaven's sake. I wrote like a 2-page letter to the warden about how the books were a lifeline. It had no effect. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's troubling, and, you know, systems need to be changed. But as you say, there is hope that things are changing. There is more accessibility to medically assisted treatment, to counseling. But there is, you know, there's a difference in people who have insurance and people who have money and people who don't.
Yeah. Can I just comment on this, Judy, for one thing, because this problem did not go away right now where we sit. Even in the 12-step programs, Ellen, you know, there is a stigma. If you are working with someone and they say, I think I should go on antidepressants, there are many people still that look at that. I was turned away by a sponsor because my psychologist put me on antidepressants after a major loss. And, you know, there are some people that hold a really hard line, almost punitive with this, and that has got to change. See, we are not doctors. People are underneath almost everyone I've ever worked with is exactly what you're talking about, Judy. Underneath that are generational traumas, are personal traumas, are reasons that people are depressed, chemical imbalances, you name it. But boy, we have got to stop stigmatizing getting people help.
Absolutely.
And I say this to you all listening, do not do this without doing your own homework and research. You know, if your doctor prescribes a drug and you look it up and you say, ooh, I don't think that's for me, go back, ask questions. We're not doctors here in that capacity. So nothing we say here is medical, but I want to say to everybody listening, do your homework, do your research.
Get help from trusted professionals, okay? That's why we'll be able to direct you to the right resources. The thing that has changed drastically, even in the 18 years that I am working in treatment and I'm working in behavioral health, especially in the past 2 or 3 years, dual diagnosis has been an accepted form of treatment in most 12-step recovery rehabs, okay? You can no longer go into a rehab and not talk about the mental health issues that brought you here. I have never talked to any other addict or alcoholic without them telling me that their trauma or their mental health has not brought them here for one reason or another. It is ridiculous to think that those two are not linked. Those two are constantly linked. And until we understand that treatment has to include both of those things, it will constantly be an enigma for us to try to get the right help for people. I know, Judy, what you've been through, and I know that we have about 5 minutes left, and I want you to be able to talk to us with a personal message. I want you to tell us what you hope readers will take away from this book and also from our time together today.
Sure. Yeah, thank you for that. I think what I want people to look at this differently. I'm hoping that, you know, by reading this book, they have a different perspective, and they look at, if they have a loved one who has substance use disorder, I hope they look at them as if they have a disease like diabetes, and that they can help them and show them that they're still loved and they're worth it. They're worth your time and they're worth saving.
Do you think you would have done anything differently if you knew then what you know now?
Yeah, I do.
And exactly what would that have been so that our readers or our listeners may want to do the same thing?
I think I would have stopped asking myself, when is she going to stop? You know, why is she still doing this? I would have gone there when she was in the biggest trouble at the end of her life. It was, you know, I was in Connecticut, she was in Kentucky. It was, you know, Christmas time. It was this time of year, exactly, as a matter of fact. And it was, I wish I'd gone on a plane and gone there and seen for myself so that I didn't believe her when she told me she wasn't using, and talked to her about, what are we going to do? Do you want to go to rehab? Do you want help to, you know, stop? Or can I help you at least live, you know, stay alive until we're ready for that? And that's what I wish I had done.
Dr. Pat, what do you think about that?
I'm right there with her, you know, because I think about what I could have done differently with my sister, you know, especially once I got a sense. You know, my sister and my stepmom died 2 years apart in 1992, 1 year apart in 1991, 92. I'm in 2 years of sobriety, and you know, I also have that list, Judy, because I now know more. It's not that I regret I didn't know any better. I didn't know what I didn't know. Let me just put it like that. But now I think back, and this is the hope for the future, Judy, isn't it? That, see, what we now know, it's not about changing the past. We can't. But it is about structuring, sculpting the future, which has more possibilities for people. Isn't that part of your message, Judy?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And keeping people alive, meeting them where they are is, I think, the important piece. Awesome.
Yeah.
And how important now, today, is the Serenity Prayer to you, Judy?
Well, you know, it's my sister had a medallion with the Serenity Prayer on it, as long as I can remember, and it was given to her because of all the struggles she was going through physically and emotionally because of her burns and her surgeries. It took me a long time to even know that that was the prayer that was the Alcoholics Anonymous prayer. I had no idea, really, until, you know, many years later. But I always, you know, kind of leaned on that as well. And still, it's a very meaningful prayer.
Judy, tell us where to find your book again and your website.
Sure, it's judymandel.com. So it's JUDYMANDEL.com. And my book is White Flag. Can find it anywhere books are sold.
If you need help, especially during this difficult time of the year, pushybroadfromthebronx.com, my 800 number, 800-889-1757. Dr. Pat, take us out.
I want to thank everybody today. But Judy, I want to ask you this question. What is your personal message for those listening, not just through the holidays, but to their hearts? What do you want to leave us with today?
Let this person know in your life that you love them. That's my personal message.
This is Ellen Stewart, the Pushy Broad from the Bronx, saying thanks for listening. And remember, everybody needs a little push.
From the Pushy Broad from the Bronx, New York.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. Contests are the responsibility of the host of this program, and not KKNW. This is Alternative Talk 1150 AM, KKNW Seattle, and KNUC 98.9 HD3 Seattle.
And good Wednesday morning to you. Benny Mathers here for a look at your Alternative Talk AM 1150 traffic up around the hour. Folks, so far no major blocking or accidents to report at the moment. Still traffic heavy in all directions around Lake Washington, 405 northbound out of those S-curves. Brakes free just before Factoria. I-5 northbound is heavy just after the Duwamish curve heading up into downtown Seattle. Brakes free, of course, after those downtown Seattle exits. And southbound traffic, well, on the I-5 side of things, it will break free after 175th. And Shoreline, and on the 405 side of things, it will break free after the 522 interchange in Boston Kenmore. But that's all right. Stay tuned, because coming up next, after the news weather, it's Love Has Many Faces with Marilyn Milano, followed by Team Deli Co.
NBC News Radio, I'm Brad Siegel. The Federal Reserve is expected to raise interest rates again today. Analysts are looking for an increase of half a percentage point. That would take the benchmark rate to the highest it's been in 15 years. The Fed has been steadily raising rates throughout the year in a bid to fight soaring inflation. However, there are signs inflation may be cooling off. The Sandy Hook School massacre took place 10 years ago today. A man walked into Sandy Hook Elementary in Newtown, Connecticut, and opened fire, killing 20 children and 6 adults. President Obama addressed a grieving nation that day.
Our hearts are broken today for the parents and grandparents, sisters and brothers of these little children, and for the families of the adults who were lost.
Newtown schools are closed today. Flags are flying at half staff. Apple is launching a big security update that aims to make iPhones more secure. If users opt in, Apple Photos, Notes, and iCloud backups will only be accessible to them. Brad Siegel, NBC News Radio.
A Better Life with Dr. Sanjay Gupta.
If you know anything about me, you probably know how much I love dogs. I have three of them.
So it's no wonder this study out of Switzerland caught my eye. Researchers there carried out this interesting experiment that found spending time petting a dog made people's brains light up, figuratively, of course. The study's author told us she chose to investigate the frontal cortex because this brain area is involved in several executive functions, such as attention, working memory, problem solving. But it's also involved in emotional processes. Why is this important? Well, at a high level, it lends even more credence to animal-assisted therapy, where interacting with animals helps humans work through their mental and physical issues. At home, this might mean after a bad day at work or if your kids aren't feeling well, cuddling up with your dog or your cat for a little bit will likely make you feel better. I'm Dr. Sanjay Gupta, helping you live a better life.
And let's go ahead and take a look now for alternative talk weather. I look for Wednesday. What was the mostly cloudy skies? Then gradually becoming sunny later on this afternoon. High temperatures around 40, 41 degrees. Tonight, partly cloudy skies. Low temperatures dropping down to freezing, 32 degrees. For Thursday and for Friday, more sunshine expected. High temperatures, not any warmer, in the low 40s. With low temperatures to the overnight in the upper 20s to low 30s. With a chance of rain and snow mixed beginning on Saturday and running through the weekend. Highs of around 40.
Please enjoy the following bonus replay of one of our favorite shows. And if you'd like to host your own program at this time or one of the other time slots available, visit 1150kknw.com and click on Be a Star to find out how fun and affordable it can be.
Welcome to Love Has Many Faces. I'm your host, Marilyn Milano, here on Alternative Talk 1150. And today, we're doing a human interest story. We're going to be talking with Dr. Floyd and Joey Hall. They're a couple that I've known for several years. They live in North Carolina, and I've been back to visit them, although not for a while, but I've met them. I know them. They're two of the kindest, nicest people you'll ever meet. And this story is about their journey through Floyd's serious cancer surgery and how their dog Meggie was not only healing to Floyd and Joey, but how she brought joy and happiness to so many people at the hospital and everywhere she went. She was really like an angel with four paws, and it's just such a wonderful story. I mean, I was following their posts on Facebook and such, and I called and said, would you guys want to come and share your story? Because this is a story about just how wonderful animals can be, and they can, and they are. So we'll be back in just a moment to listen to that story. Remember, we're here to raise awareness, touch hearts, save the lives of animals, and help people in the process. So we'll be back in a moment with Dr. Floyd and Joey Hall. I'm Marilyn Milano, your host of Love Has Many Faces, here on Alternative Talk 1150.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to the Ananda Institute of Living Yoga, we cover the world of animals. This week, December 18th, it's Behavior Training and Healing Sunday with me and Talk with Your Animal or Human Loved Ones and Personal Awareness Coaching with Natasha Venter. It's also our Christmas and Hanukkah show, so we'll be singing. Hope you can join us for that and call in with your questions. Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
Alternative Talk 1150, the talk of the sound.
Okay, welcome back to Love Has Many Faces. As I mentioned just a moment ago, we're here with Dr. Floyd and Joey Hall. They are a wonderful couple I've known for many, many years. And we're going to be talking about something that's a little bit different today. Floyd just went through a very difficult and comprehensive cancer surgery, and this dialogue is actually about how Meggie, their beautiful, amazing, adorable Cocker Spaniel that the whole hospital fell in love with, played a part in the healing, how she made friends with the staff, how important she was to the whole process, because, of course, this show is for people who love animals, and from all accounts, this dog was just amazing. So anyway, first of all, I think we're going to hear from Joey. And that is Dr. Floyd's wife, and she's been through this whole process with him. So Joey and Floyd, first of all, welcome. Thank you for being on the show today and being willing to share your story.
Thank you, Marilyn.
Thank you for having us, Marilyn.
Absolutely. So Joey, I mean, I will let you start where you think it makes the most sense, because this was a long process, and then there were some places where Maggie just really was a shining star.
She was through the whole process, and it's hard to even know where to begin because, like you said, it was a very difficult and complicated cancer diagnosis. So it happened kind of quickly. Floyd was diagnosed with a very rare cancer, and we live in on the coast of North Carolina, and Wilmington did not feel that they could handle this type of cancer, so they referred us to Duke, which is about a three-hour drive for us. So the three of us, Floyd, Maggie, and I, traveled to Duke, and we had a consultation with the surgeon and with the radiation oncologist, and we were under the thought process that we were going to go up there and have a consult with the surgeon and maybe come back home for radiation. But after the radiation oncologist explained it to us that Floyd really needed to be where he was up at Duke Sarcoma Center. They deal with this on a daily basis. They knew what they were doing. And unfortunately, fortunately Wilmington, would very rarely see this type of cancer, so they wouldn't have the understanding to deal with it like Duke did. So during the consultation, you know, we realized that that was where we needed to be, but Floyd raised the issue that we live 3 hours away, plus we have a Cocker Spaniel, and we don't know how we're going to handle all this with the Cocker Spaniel. So after we listened to them for quite a while, we realized that that's where we wanted Floyd to have his treatment. We said we were going to step out, leap of faith, and figure it all out, but we wanted him to have treatment at Duke. So the very first day that Floyd went, he had to be measured for
a mold. The cancer was in my right thigh, okay? So they had to create a mold so that I could put my leg in that mold, and the other leg would not be bothered by the radiation. It would be blocked. Continue, Joey.
So that was the first day that Maggie and I, we had a three-hour window. What were we going to do? So we just kind of walked around the campus. So the next day, Floyd started his radiation treatment. So at the very beginning, I would bring Floyd into the cancer center, and a volunteer would bring him down to the sarcoma center, and he would go in for his radiation, and then they'd bring him back up. Maggie and I would wait upstairs. Well, that lasted for 2 days, and finally the one girl said, Mrs. Hall, is there any way that you could come down to the sarcoma center with your husband? And I said, yes, but we have Maggie with us. And they said, Maggie is invited. So that started Maggie's adventure. And she was so thrilled that she finally got to go with her daddy. And she walked beside that wheelchair like she had been doing it her entire life.
That was so wonderful.
Her job. And that's what she was going to do. She was going to walk right beside her dad. And she took him down to radiation every day for the next 5 weeks.
My gosh.
She was just phenomenal. And during that time, not only was she a comfort for me waiting out in the waiting room, but for the patients. They just fell in love with her.
Oh, yeah.
So we decided that Maggie was going to wear a different dress every day.
I love that.
Just for the patients, just to make them smile. So every week on every Thursday, Floyd was to have a consultation with his radiation oncologist And the first week, Floyd went back. The nurse came and got him, and Maggie and I waited out in the waiting room. Well, the second week, Floyd went back, and the nurse came back, and she said, Mrs. Hull, the doctor would like to see you as well. And I said, is there a problem? And she said, oh, no. He just it would like you to be with your husband. And I said, well, I have Maggie here. And he said, to tell you that Maggie is invited. Maggie is invited for the consultation. So Maggie was beyond thrilled because she would watch him go through those doors every day for radiation and just sit there and wait for him. So now she was allowed to go behind those doors. She was just thrilled and just the best behaved little angel. So this went on for several weeks, and the radiation oncologist finally said, Miss Maggie, you've earned your service dog medal. And now your job for the rest of your time is to make those patients smile out there.
Oh.
So that was her job, and she took it, and she acted like she knew exactly what to do.
Isn't that something? And, I mean, you know, I met the dogs that you used to have because I visited you many years ago, and you've had Maggie a few years now. And, you know, she's so adorable anyway. I mean, she's an adorable kind of reddish and white cocker and just the sweetest face in the whole world.
Yeah.
And you can tell she's a very sweet dog, but just the fact that she understood, you know, she wanted to be with her dad. And then the fact that she was there and she provided smiles and something lighthearted and loving, you know, for the other people who were there. I sometimes don't think people stop and think about how much our animals do for us. I mean, we do a lot for them, but they do so much for us. And I mean, just seeing your posts and following your stories about Maggie and how everyone had fallen in love with her, it was so heartwarming. And I thought it's like she was born to the job.
Honestly, that's what everybody that has trained service dogs, they said that she actually knew what to do as an instinct. So she was a natural at it. And she had... There were volunteers that were on other floors that they would see me walking in with her. And they'd come down on the day they volunteered just to see if Maggie was at the sarcoma center. And a lot of the volunteers had shared that there used to be a lot of therapy dogs that would come through there, but through COVID, that had all stopped. And how beneficial those dogs were to the patients. In fact, one day, a lady in a wheelchair, a patient, she came up and she said, I know I'm not supposed to probably pet her, but could I possibly please pet her? And I said, absolutely. And she just sat there and cried and pet Maggie the entire time. And Maggie just sat there and, with her, just like she understood that that's what she was supposed to do.
Oh, I mean, what an angel, a true angel.
She is.
No doubt about it. She's
doing
her fursuit.
That's right.
They could not get over how well behaved she was. Never a peep out of her. And, you know, there was a lot of stimulus that she had to get used to. You know, people pushing carts and just even wheelchairs. She was never around a wheelchair before. So it got to the point that every time somebody came in a wheelchair, she thought it was her job to go and greet them. So I'd say to them, is it okay? She thinks that she has to greet you. And they'd say, absolutely. And so she'd go up to greet them because they were in a wheelchair, and that's what she thought she was supposed to do.
She was now like, okay, they're in a wheelchair, and it's my job to go make them feel better.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
Yep.
Well, you know,
that went on for 5 weeks, Marilyn, and each moment that I would come out of treatment, one of the young ladies that was on the radiation team would push me out into the waiting room so that we could intersect with Joey and Maggie, and Maggie would she'd get all excited because Daddy was coming, and even our intersection of her being excited because Daddy was here would bring joy to people. You'd hear people go, oh, isn't that sweet? And and then I'd say, so who did you make smile today? And then Joey would reveal all the stories to me, which is like, you know, I kind of knew some of the stories, bajillion at first-hand knowledge. So,
there was a young lady at the concierge desk at the cancer center, the first person you see when you walk into the center, and her and Maggie just developed a really cute friendship that we continued our friendship even after the treatments. We're still in touch with her because of Maggie. And we have other friends that we made, and they were all through Maggie.
In fact, Maggie was responsible for kind of helping one family. I won't go into their story. It's a separate story in its own right, but kind of a sad story. But they had a French poodle. A pug, okay? And it was really close to the daughter who is the one going through the treatments. And they went back at their consult, and because of Maggie, their doctor said, by all means, bring him in. Well, that picked that young girl's spirits up to the point where, she rallied for a little bit. So we credit Maggie for sort of breaking down barriers and saying to people, bring your puppy.
Well, I think, for many generations and decades, a lot of well-meaning people have underestimated the benefits that animals can bring to us. I mean, but people are becoming more aware. I mean, first of all, you read quite a bit about dogs going into senior care facilities, dementia facilities, and how it's the first time that the person has smiled,
Absolutely.
And there's something about these animals that reaches into your heart and soul, and they know. And and I've heard this with autistic children who haven't spoken, and, the animal can reach them. And so because of what we're learning, and I think animals are valuable no matter what, right?
Yeah.
Not everybody has that feeling or understanding, but now that people are understanding just how much of a help they can be, that's one of the things that after Hurricane Katrina, they started changing the rules about people being able to bring their animals into shelters because it was unthinkable that people would want to leave their dogs behind. That's right. And they're realizing the value. And I think as we move forward, that we're going to see more instances where pets can be part of the process because they are so beneficial. I know during COVID when I was stuck at home, having my animals here with me made all the difference in the world. I was stuck at home for about a year and a half. They made such a difference. So anyway, you made it through the radiation, and yes, Maggie was there every step of the way, and then it was time for your surgery, right?
Which was unbelievable. Not to distract from the focus on Maggie, but the surgery is a story in and of itself. It took 10 hours. They estimated it was going to take 6. I won't go into detail because, again, don't want to distract from the main focus. But there was a complication during my surgery where I lost 4.5 liters of blood. And your listeners may realize that we only have 5 liters in our body. So it was a pretty critical moment. And Maggie was out in the surgical waiting room with Joey, had never left Joey's side, not once, not ever. She stayed right with her the whole time.
We had to be there at 10 o'clock in the morning for surgery, and Floyd didn't go back until 3:30. So Maggie was in pre-op from 10 o'clock till 3:30, and the little girl was in that room. And just an angel just sat beside her dad in that bed. And then they finally took him into surgery. So then Maggie and I were on our own. But she was, at first, we were out in the very first waiting room that Maggie and I were in. And she knew that her dad went behind that one door. And she wouldn't move. She just sat there and just stared at the door. He was there. And she was going to stay there the entire time until he got out of there. Unfortunately, his surgery is lasting so long, Maggie, they moved us to another waiting room that this little girl sat with me from 10 o'clock in the morning until 2:30 in the morning.
Oh,
and never left my side, and I personally don't know what I would have done without her.
Oh, they're such a comfort. I mean, they are such a comfort. And so when Floyd came out of the surgery, I mean, I know there's a period in recovery. When did he get to see Maggie? When did you get to see Maggie, Floyd?
Actually, that was kind of fascinating. Again, not to take away from Maggie. They immediately put me in ICU. I didn't even go to recovery. As soon as the surgery was over, I was immediately put into ICU. And that was on a very, very early morning Saturday. I came into ICU at 3 a.m. And
Maggie and I were there by 9.
Maggie and Joey were there by 9. And I had said, Joey had already talked to the nursing staff about, is it okay if our puppy comes in? And they went, yeah, no issue. Well, she lit it up. Oh my goodness, when she came down the hallway like she owned the place. Okay. And it was like, there he is. And she came into the room and hopped up and patted me on the arm like, hi dad.
Oh,
and she stayed right beside me, and every nurse that came through, even if they weren't my nurse assigned to me, came in and said, I was told I had to come in and see this dog. And they went, oh my God. She won them over.
And they were so kind up there that they encouraged Maggie to go into bed with Floyd, but I was kind of leery of that because of his leg, you know, that she might not quite understand. She knew that there was something wrong with that leg because she'd always just she'd lay her head on it. But I was worried about her jumping on it, not purposely to hurt him.
Right.
But we did encourage her going into bed, but we put up a chair right next to him so that she could put her front paws up on the bed with him.
She
was remarkable. And then I was in ICU for 5 days, Marilyn, and finally they moved me to a step-down unit. Well, the step-down unit had heard about Maggie, and the charge nurse said, I hope they bring that dog when they transfer this patient because I want to meet this dog. This dog is supposed to be remarkable. The problem was is that they were transferring me at 9 o'clock at night. Joey had already gone back to the hotel and I think was probably getting ready for bed at that time, so that didn't happen. But the next day, staff got to meet Maggie, and same deal, they fell in love with her. So,
well, just, who wouldn't?
Just the most remarkable puppy. Even the valets, when Joey would go get the car while I was in the ICU or, you know, in the step-down, they would say, Mrs. Hall, where's Maggie? There she is. And they turn up and they pet her. So even the valet parking staff was tuned into who this puppy was. So she's a remarkable dog.
She's a celebrity. And you know, I mean, again, this story has a lot of layers to it, but I think what really stands out is just how remarkable animals can be, how healing they can be, how they can bridge the gap between people, how they can bring people together. I mean, I've always been a dog lover. I mean, I have a heart for all animals. I mean, dogs are my favorite, and I have Cocker Spaniels also. But, I mean, they're just – animals are so amazing, and a lot of times people who haven't been through something or who just haven't had the same kind of relationship, they're not aware how much they can do, how much they can help, how healing they can be. And so I can't believe we're going to be out of time in a couple of minutes, but I know that you are home now, Floyd. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yep.
And so how is Maggie adjusting, and how are you feeling like it's just a little easier because she's there?
It's always easier when Maggie's here, always. Maggie is a remarkable puppy, and I call her a puppy. She's 5 years old. Real quickly, I have to get up and refer to what we refer to as being mobile. I'm on a I'm on a walker, and, you know, I don't have any, I can't put any weight on my right leg. So, you know, I have to maneuver the walker, and I have to do some walking around the house. Well, Maggie and I used to play continuously. You know, we'd go out in the backyard and play ball, and, you know, we'd throw the ball in the house. And so she's real used to Daddy playing with her. Daddy can't play with her right now. So lo and behold, Maggie's watching me do this walker, and I'm walking behind the couch, and she comes bounding up the couch and like, Daddy. So I have to stop and pet her, okay? So we refer to it as Maggie made lemonade. She found, she's making lemonade out of lemons, and she just makes us laugh continuously. And we live in a wonderful neighborhood. I mean, just truly a wonderful neighborhood. We've got people stopping in. It's like Grand Central Station in here at times. And she just greets everybody. Hi, you know, it's nice to see you. Thanks for coming. Tail never stops waggling. She's an amazing animal. Just, can you tell we're a little happy that we have her?
I think it's wonderful. I remember when you had lost your other three and you weren't sure about another dog just because the pain of losing him is so deep. And I've lost 10 myself, and I get it. But I think of the joy and the blessings and the healing that she has brought to you and how she's touched other people. She really had a purpose here, and her purpose was to be with you for all these reasons. And I mean, I think it's amazing. So I know we have to jump off in a minute, but what I'd love to do is a couple months down the road, bring you guys back, get an update as to how things are going, you know, how's Maggie adjusting, how are you doing? And I just thank you for being willing to share this very personal story and share some insights into this wonderful, gentle soul. And I hope it opens up people's hearts and minds to some of the possibilities that they can have with their animals and how healing and wonderful they can really be. So we're going to jump off and take a short break. Dr. Floyd, Joey, thank you for being here. Like I said, we will have you come back again. I'm Marilyn Milano. I'm your host of Love Has Many Faces. We'll be back after a short pause. You're listening to Alternative Talk 1150. And we've been hearing Joey and Floyd's story and Maggie, of course. So thank you. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
This is Marilyn Milano, your host of Love Has Many Faces. The music that you're hearing during this show every week is exclusively original music from my own CDs. If you're enjoying it and would like to order a copy of one of my two CDs for yourself or as a gift, just go to MarilynMilano.net and you can order directly from the website. I give a portion of every sale back to Animal Rescue because that's part of the whole cause. Thank you for listening and thanks for your support.
Bored with the other stations hammering away on the same old talking points? Try Alternative Talk 1150 and get some variety.
Welcome back to Love Has Many Faces. I hope you enjoyed hearing from Dr. Floyd and Joy as much as I did, and just this remarkable story of the remarkable pup. And I want you to share this story with people who maybe haven't had that experience with their animals yet, or they're just not sure, because it's really something. Remember, we are here every Tuesday from 9 to 9:30 in the morning Pacific time. And again, we are here to raise awareness, touch hearts, save the lives of animals, and help people while doing that. So let people know about the show. And this is a story for the holiday season, a story of healing and comfort and a dog who brought joy to so many people during this whole process. So anyway, I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Marilyn Milano, your host. This is Love Has Many Faces on Alternative Talk 1150. Until next week.
NBC News Radio, I'm Brad Siegel. Congress is setting its sights on the social media site TikTok. There are growing doubts about the Chinese-owned company's ability to safeguard American user data.
If you download the TikTok app,
it allows them to go into your phone and look at keystrokes. They can get banking information.
That's Republican Congressman Mike McCall of Texas, who warns the Chinese government can use the app's algorithms to push their propaganda. Because of that, he says there will be a coordinated plan to ban TikTok in the U.S. when the GOP takes control of the House next year. It's been a decade since the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting in Connecticut. President Biden is declaring today a day of remembrance to honor the 21st graders and six educators who lost their lives in that tragedy. The Federal Reserve is expected to raise interest rates again today. Analysts are looking for an increase of half a percentage point. That would take the benchmark rate to the highest it's been in 15 years. Brad Siegel, NBC News Radio.
The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers.
Everyone, welcome to Team Donico, helping pets and their people. We have another episode, and each episode is always chock full of great info and updates and wonderful, helpful tips. And so I'm Marilyn Milano. I'm your host today, and this is no exception. We are going to be talking with Marty Casey, the president of the board of directors, who has all kinds of tips to help keep your pets safe at the holidays. This is a busy time. There's a lot of commotion, a lot of people. We're going to talk about many things that we can all do to just avoid an unhappy time at the holidays and just to keep our pets safe. So very excited about our conversation with Marty. She knows a lot about this. And so we invite you to stay tuned. And as you're waiting to listen to our conversation, just please keep in the back of your mind that picture of that person that may be out in the rain and cold. They may be, standing on the street corner by themselves or just walking about aimlessly, and they may be unhoused or they may be low income, but if they've got a pet with them, I know we've all wondered, how do they take care of their animal? We know how expensive vet care is. It's even more expensive now. Well, this is what Team Donico is helping with. It is helping pets and their people. It is helping the pets of unhoused people and low-income people. And in doing so, it's also helping people. So what they're doing is wonderful. You can go to donico.org to learn more, donicoe.org. And please stay tuned. And Marty and I will be talking in just a moment about all the things you can do to make sure your pet has a safe and happy holiday. I'm Marilyn Milano, and we'll be back in just a moment with Marty.
Donico Pet Clinic provides comprehensive care for the animals of people in need. Funded by donations and powered by volunteers, Donico Pet Clinic keeps overhead to a minimum to ensure healing is at a maximum.
Hi, this is Marty. Please help Team Donico make a difference in the lives of pets and their people. Volunteer or donate today. Donico Pet Clinic. Log on to donico.org. That's DONEYCOE.org.
Well, welcome back to Team Donico, helping pets and their people. And as I mentioned a moment ago, we are here with the president of the board of directors, Marty Casey, and we're going to have a little bit of an in-depth conversation about keeping your pets safe during the holidays. So, Marty, as always, welcome. Thanks for all you're doing, and thanks for taking time to be here today.
I'm always pleased to be here, Marilyn, and thank you for having me.
It's just always wonderful. You have such great knowledge. Now, I thought before we dived into the tips for pets, because you are the president of the board of directors of Donico, do you have like a 1 or 2 minute update for our listeners? Maybe they've missed a show or two, just something to let them know how things are going?
Yes, and it's so nice to be able to say things are going well. It's been so rewarding that we are able to take care of so many pets. Our vets are getting more and more comfortable in our space, and now they're able to do some of the procedures actually on our clinic days, where they can, do a surgery before we really open up. They might, on Thursdays, we're doing a few surgeries during the day, and we have people then stay with the animal until they recover from anesthesia and their parent can come and get them and pick them up and take them home, and we send them home with explicit instructions and the right medications. So it's great to see. I mean, it's just so heartwarming to see so many more animals getting the care that they need, and they're all just such little loves that I have to go back when I'm there and see them all, and I'm going to take them all home.
You know,
they already have good homes.
It's just heartwarming to see and hear what is happening. So again, I mean, thanks to Donya Coe, thanks to you for all you have done and all the volunteers and donors and everybody who's made it possible. And one of the things that's so important, you know, we all love our pets so much. They mean so much to us. And so the holidays can be a particularly treacherous time for pets. There are a lot of things around that can harm them, foods, plants, all kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
So you put together some suggestions for helping keep pets safe over the holiday.
Yes. And I just, you know, we all find, I think we all, as much as we enjoy the holidays and this time of year, sometimes it is also a little stressful. And it's also stressful for your pet. And there's all kinds of new things for them to find and to eat. And I know I have a very small dog, and he is such an effective vacuum cleaner.
Right.
He will eat anything and everything with no regard as to whether it's good for her or not.
That's right.
So I like to think that I know a lot, and I did have a lot of help on this list. I accessed a lot of resources, and I talked to some of our vets. And I thought I was knowledgeable about food, but every time I look to another list or talk to someone, I find out new foods that are really quite bad, and every pet is different. And the reaction can be fatal in some and just get them sick in others, very similar to humans. So we really just need to keep them away from all of those foods and with what we know is good for them, which is the pet food or homemade meals and things of that nature.
Yes.
One of the things I was really surprised at is that, you know, sometimes it is hard to keep everything on the table. And the first one to exploit that will be your pet. And they will find themselves under the table, or you will find them under the table munching away on anything that could have spilled.
Oh,
yeah. One thing that I read that was so surprising was eating turkey or turkey skin can cause a life-threatening condition in pets of pancreatitis.
I didn't even know this. I didn't know.
I did not know that either. I am shocked. And then other foods that are really healthy for people and we're told to eat more of are things like onions, raisins, and grapes. And I know that raisins and grapes, I'd learned that recently, and it's, when you start talking to people about that, they're like, really? But they can be deadly to animals.
Yes.
And one raisin or one grape can have a severe negative impact on their health. We've all heard about chocolate, and in our house, the pet has no danger of getting any of my chocolate. So we do that. But I know. But sometimes people use an artificial sweetener called, and I can't say it right, the xylitol.
That's right.
And, yeah, commonly used in, you know, gum and sugar-free foods.
Yes.
That you might get, and you might, sometimes it's used in baking, and you might think, oh, I'm going to have a sugar-free muffin or a sugar-free brownie. But that can be deadly if consumed by a dog or a cat.
Yes.
So if you have pets and somebody brings xylitol, I would just say put it in the kitchen or in the freezer or something so, and never, ever pull that out when your pet is at home, because
Never.
It's very, very dangerous.
Well, the thing is, sometimes people have chewing gum. They don't think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my pet, if given the opportunity, well, all three of my pets would be interested in perusing the contents of my purse if they had access.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't chew gum, but a lot of people do.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the gum has xylitol. The other thing that I had read also, Marty, I think this is what I understand. But another name for xylitol now on some ingredients, like some of the peanut butters where they use artificial sweeteners, is birch sugar.
Oh,
so
okay.
If it says birch sugar, that's likely xylitol. And if somebody finds that I'm wrong on this, then my apologies, but I've read it in several places. And so I'd rather
okay.
be sorry.
Yes. And just like many of us have learned to do now, we read labels for ourselves. Well, we also have to read labels for our pets.
Oh, yes.
Because just as some foods are really bad for us and they're still sold, there are a lot of foods out there that are really, you know, harmful to our pets and they're still sold. So
it's just, you know, back in the day, like in the late 70s, when I was alive still, I used to think nothing of tossing a grape to one of my dogs. And I'd toss them a grape, and they ate them. And now they weren't hurt by it, but that's like some people can smoke and never become sick, and other people smoke a little bit, and they have terrible lung problems. So why take the chance?
It's not worth it. And one of the things that I really wanted to talk about this today is for all the people that are living in the Seattle area, and even if you're living in a different area of the country, I think we're all in the same boat right now that there is a shortage of veterinary care.
Yeah.
And in this area, we have all of our vets that used to be open 7 days a week. The vast majority of them have gone to just weekdays. So if you have an animal that gets sick over the weekends and you want to go to a 24-hour vet, the waits are horrendous.
They sure are.
Yes. And so you may not be able to get your pet the care that they need, which even makes this more critical during these holidays, because if they eat something, it takes some time for you to figure out that they've eaten something.
Right.
And the symptoms are symptoms of so many things. They're, you know, lethargic. They have gastrointestinal issues, all of those, the fever, all of those things, which can mean many things.
Yes.
But you need to, it's quick action is going to make the difference. And there's all these things that we just don't think about, like putting the trash away, dispose of turkey carcasses. And the tip that I read is that you need to dispose of everything around the turkey carcass, the bags or the packaging that it came in, the strings, the bones, and put it in a covered and tightly secured trash bag, because our little fur babies do know how to dig out the trash. And they're very good at it. So, I mean, what makes them so charming can also be very harmful to them.
It's the same thing
with all of our plants.
Yeah.
You know, all the plants that we have are poisonous to them. And the ASPCA does have a list. So if you have some questions, you should go out there. But some of the things I read, which I had no idea about, were baby's breath, hydranias. I had no idea those were poisonous to pets. So
I did either.
And all of those other things that sometimes are made with our decorations, they can ingest them, and it can cause severe damage to the intestine and even perforate the intestine, which is has an awful result in most cases. So it's hard. But I have some, you know, one of the things I figured out after doing all this, but we'll talk about the next thing, which is parties. And if you're hosting a party, and for any of you out there that are hosting parties sometimes and you wonder, oh, my goodness, how did we get into this? You have done everything, you know, and then all of a sudden, you know, all these people are coming or your family's coming and you're just wondering, like, how did the holidays get so stressful? Well, your pet is also very stressed.
Yes.
Because this is all new to them. It may happen once a year. But all these visitors coming into their house, it's, remember, when we have these wonderful creatures, this is their home, too.
Oh, yeah.
And they don't understand what is happening. So different things can happen that maybe you don't think about, like when you're letting people in the door, your pet is very stressed and may just go running out. And
exactly.
You're taking coats, offering drinks, and doing all of that, and you can't possibly have your eye on them the whole time.
No.
But they are looking at how do they get out of this stressful situation. And it
or
may
just
be the
run outside because they're excited. Yeah. It's like, wow, there's an opening here, you know.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the other thing is that any pet, when they are stressed or scared, can become aggressive.
Yeah.
So, you know, that can happen, and then you have the ugly situation of your sweet little pet bit someone. Well, they didn't bite someone because they're mean pets. They bit someone because they were scared.
Yes.
And stressed out. So those are all things that are great to avoid.
Yes.
And then the other thing, which I really related to, was, you know, if there's a dog, and this is before I had a dog, so I had limited knowledge, but I was always somewhat intimidated by them before I found out how wonderful they were. And I don't know how many times I would try to earn their love and affection by giving them a little treat from my plate. Well, there are lots of people like that that want to, you know, there's this, these puppy dog eyes looking at you, or this cat looking at you like, oh, I need some. And then you give them something, but I didn't know which, you know, I would have given them a grape. I had no idea.
That's so true.
That was a problem.
And what you're speaking to here, Marty, it's like so many of these things that happen, they're accidental, and it's a lot of the time it's because people don't know. If you don't have pets, or even if you have pets but you haven't been reading the latest stuff, you don't know that a little piece of chocolate or a grape or a raisin or something, it could actually be the demise, you know, lead to the demise of that animal. So it's so important. And I have a little room in my house where the dogs stay when I leave the house. And that's usually where they go if I have more than a couple people. And it's more for their safety than anybody else's, because mine are sweet and loving and adorable. But, I mean, they'll try to catch food, you know. And I mean, it's like and people, you can't educate everybody that's there in the house at that time. And then I'm just going to throw in one little thing quickly before we continue. And that is that during the holidays when you're putting snacks out and, like, chips, and, I mean, this goes into the football season too, be sure to cut the ends and tops off all the bags and then toss them, because pets can suffocate in bags. It is a big deal. There's a pet website called Prevent Pet Suffocation. As a pet owner for 40 years, I didn't know this was a thing until a few years ago. So, again, we're trying to educate people. And I'm curious, Marty, do you have some of this information on the Don't Eat Co. website, or will you?
No, we will be posting it. And so it will be on the Don't Eat Co. site. I realized it was a really good idea to get it up there, so it'll probably be up by the end of this week. So,
that's great. So they can go to donico.org, donycoe.org, because it's hard to write all this stuff down and remember.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely, and I think it's, and I will probably provide a link to a couple of the other sites, like the American Veterinary Medical Association and then ASPCA that also have some tips. Marilyn, I love what you said about having your pets go into another room. I think that after, you know, researching this and talking to people, that sometimes when you're having a lot of people over or you're having family and you know that you cannot watch your pet every second,
right?
Your pet might have a great time just being in a separate room.
Yes.
On their favorite blanket, curled up, watching TV, sleeping, and then you can go in at the end or even in the middle and give them a few pets and rubs. But that is really so, and it's going to take a lot of stress off of you as the host also.
Oh, yes. Oh,
because then you don't have to worry about, oh, my goodness, my pet is going to be getting something that could kill it. And it's enough stress.
Or like, where's Barney, you know, or like, how can I keep mine Fluffy, and where do they go? It really is. It's easier for me, and I think it's easier for them, and they seem to do better. I mean, I don't have a lot of big parties, and especially since COVID, I don't have a bunch of people in here most of the time, but it's so important. And then you bring up another good point about watching the exits, and make sure your pets have ID tags and microchips, because if your dog does scoot out the door, you're going to find that animal so much faster if your dog or cat is microchipped.
But those are things that you want to prevent, because that time that when you realize your pet has run out the door, your heart is going to sink.
That's right.
And it's just with a little preparation and maybe changing some routines so that the pet isn't out, or if there are other things you can do to make sure that your pet has no access, so you never have to confront the situation of using your ID tag or microchips. Not that you shouldn't have them, but
right.
If you can avoid that time where you're like, oh, my goodness, Barney is missing. I don't know where he is. I don't know what happened. And it could have been 2 hours. It's all pain that we don't need to inflict on ourselves or our pets.
Oh, indeed, indeed. And, I mean, to me, that's like the last line of defense right there. You know, that's like
right.
If you're trying to do everything right. And sometimes even when
things happen, yes.
Yeah, things happen even though we're trying to be the best pet parents. And, I mean, so an example, I should know about this stuff because I've had animals for so long. And about 2 years ago, my little Tux, he's almost 13 now, but I discovered he was munching these little tiny glass lights off the bottom of my artificial tree. I am surprised he did not die. As soon as I found that out, I got rid of the tree. But it's like he just up over there and I hear this junk, junk, junk. And I mean, he gets plenty of food, but I had no idea he would try to eat a light bulb. And so, I mean, I'm just grateful he's still here. And
right.
You have to be worried.
And that is lucky.
They'll get in
there. Very lucky.
Yeah.
They don't understand. So a lot of times, you know, if you wouldn't let a 2-year-old child run around and because they'll eat anything also.
Yes.
You shouldn't be letting your pet run around and eat those same things because they don't understand what's bad for them and what's good for them. And again, back to that issue of that there's such a shortage of veterinary care that even if we realize that our pet isn't as urgent, there's another one that's in line at the urgent care facility, they will the wait even becomes longer.
It's bad. I waited 6 hours when my daughter passed in April from congestive heart failure, and she started going downhill. We had 3 trips up there. But the first trip, I was in the car 6 hours with her, and I was worried about her, and I was scared. And I mean, we've never had anything like this, Marty, in the years I've been here. Have you seen anything like this?
No, and it is. And so next time you do see your vet, please be sure to give them a lot of kudos. Many of them are picking up a lot of the jobs that they're doing, you know, a job and a half or 2 jobs, and they are doing the very best they can. And they care about the animals. They don't, you know, they don't make as much money as doctors. And, you know, it's a tough profession. And they're doing it because they love your pet. And so just understand that they're doing the very best they can and hopefully keep your pet healthy so you don't have to feed them as often.
It's a tough situation and costs are very high as well, which, you know, this is why Donico is so amazing because you're able to help with that with people with low incomes or who are not in homes. And so all of those things are important, but boy, the old adage, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure.
Absolutely.
And again, I really encourage everyone to go to the donico.org website and look at this information and think about it. This is serious. It's true. It's not fear-mongering. This is all truthful, and it's all been researched, and we want to protect these babies. So, you know, Marty, I always am so shocked at how fast the time goes. We've got about a minute. Is there any last thought you'd like to leave with our listeners before we sign off?
First of all, I want everybody to have a great holiday and enjoy your festivities and enjoy your pets. And then when you're enjoying other people, if there are a lot of people there and it's going to cause stress, just have them watch Animal Planet in their favorite blanket. And then they're going to be all ready for you when you're done with the evening and or the day and can spend some extra time with them.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, because they are such an important part of everybody's family.
Oh.
And they go on to eat everything. So, and we laugh at it, but it can sometimes be not very funny. So, anyway, thank you for letting me share these tips. Hopefully some people have learned things and we can get this up on our website.
I'm sure that a lot of people learned a lot from this. This is so informative. It's so helpful. By the way, another alternative, if you're not sure about putting them in a room by themselves, there's always the dog sitter. That might sound a little indulgent, but, you know, if you've got a dog sitter that you see a lot,
sometimes they can take them for walks and watch them and take them on leashes, and that's another alternative too. So there's always things we can do. Marty, we've been talking with Marty Casey, who is the president of the board of directors of Don't Eat Co., and she has shared just a wealth of information with us this evening. Thank you so much for just all of this wonderful, helpful, useful information that is going to save a lot of pets' lives. Now, we're going to take a very short break and then come back with Eric Crema, who will have another episode of Celebrity Pets. So stay tuned for that. And again, Marty, thank you, and you have a fantastic
time. Thank you.
All right. We appreciate you listening. We're going to be back in just a moment with Eric Crema, who has another episode of Celebrity Pets. So do stay tuned.
Hi, this is Marty. Please help Team Don't Eat Co. make a difference in the lives of people and their animals. DonEatCo.org. That's DoneyCoe.org.
Coming up next on the show is a special feature courtesy of your friends at Team Don't Eat Co. It's Celebrity Pets with Eric Crema.
On today's Celebrity Pets, I'm talking with Jeff Renner, famed local meteorologist and author, about Lucy, who is a Siberian Husky. Welcome, Jeff.
Good to be with you.
I love the name Lucy.
Well, she's quite a comedian, and so we chose that because it reminded us of I Love Lucy, which is a good description of our emotions toward her. She also has as a full name Lucy Sky Diamond.
Oh, nice.
She leaps. And so she sort of is considered from the Beatles song, Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds.
That's awesome. Well, you too have a really active lifestyle, and it would seem that Lucy is probably a perfect fit for the family.
She is. She's my exercise partner.
Okay.
We go hiking. We go, literally, I'll go bicycling, not with my road bike, but with a trail bike, with her running alongside me, because I can't keep up with her otherwise. I can't run. My knees won't take it. I've clocked her up to like 20, 22 miles per hour in
wow.
short spurts. And then during the winter, she loves the snow. I love the snow. And so we'll take her up and do what we call ski touring. And basically, it's cross-country skiing. You have a waist belt and an elastic band connecting the two of you. And it goes really well unless a rabbit runs across the trail.
Suddenly, you're skiing fast.
It's exciting.
Well, it's funny. My doctor, I was all proud to tell him, I'm going on walks with my dog. And he goes, what kind of dog do you have? I said, well, it's a Chihuahua mix. He goes, so you're not really going on a walk. You're just kind of sniffing around, and you're not getting any exercise there. So he called me out on that.
I'll loan you Lucy sometime.
Thanks. So Lucy's about three, right? What has she meant to the family?
Oh, you know, she's the third Siberian Husky we've had. And our other Siberian Husky named Roger was also a rescue or a rehome. And he passed May of 2019. And we got Lucy in December. We needed some time, as all pet owners can associate, just to sort of internalize that loss. We got her in December 2019, and so we had her during those early shelter-in-place periods, and it was really a sanity boost for us. Although she was crazy, my wife and I thought we were never going to be able to sit down for a meal together, nor watch TV, because she was just very demanding of attention, because she'd been from place to place to place. But just is a real definite member of the family. As you pointed out, she gets me out. We just love exploring the world together.
Well, Jeff, thanks so much for spending a little bit of time with us on this edition of Celebrity Pets. I really appreciate your thoughts.
Delighted to be with you.
Go enjoy Lucy. And folks, Celebrity Pets is where you discover why the biggest celebrities in your life are often your furry friends.
Team Don't Eat Co.'s Celebrity Pets is supported in part by Jerry and Lois Photography, where memories and dreams take flight. Learn more at jerryandlois.com.
Don't Eat Co. hopes you enjoyed this Celebrity Pets interview. Be sure to listen for more on our upcoming shows and log on to DonEatCo.org to learn ways to help animals in need.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. Contests are the responsibility of the host of this program and not KKNW. This is Alternative Talk 1150 AM, KKNW Seattle, and KNUC 98.9 HD3 Seattle.
And good Wednesday morning to you. Benny Mathers here for a look at your Alternative Talk AM 1150 traffic update for around the town. Well, good thing, folks, so far no major blocking or accidents to report at the moment. Slowing still on 405 northbound up here in Factoria and the Coal Creek Parkway running up into Bellevue. It will break free after the 520. 405 southbound is also still heavy around the 522 interchange in Bothell Kenmore and it stretches back to the I-5. But that's all right. Stay tuned because coming up next, after the news and weather, it's the Remarkable Relationship Show with your host, Misty Russell. And she has a chat with Cynthia Lane. And it's all about her path to the divine. Stay tuned.
This report is sponsored by Whole Foods Market.
NBC News Radio, I'm Lisa Taylor. The Federal Reserve is expected to raise interest rates yet again today. Director of the National Economic Council, Brian Deese, talked about the state of the economy ahead of the decision.
For this period of the last several months, we are seeing this transition to more steady and stable growth. That's what we want to see. That's what we need to continue. And we need to have the policies in place to continue that trend as well.
Analysts are looking for an increase of half a percentage point. The Fed has been steadily raising interest rates throughout this year in a bid to fight soaring inflation. However, there are signs inflation may be cooling off. That's because the consumer price index for November rose by just 0.1%. Former President Obama says Sandy Hook families helped him believe that real change is possible. Obama released a statement marking the 10th anniversary of the tragedy in Newtown, Connecticut that resulted in the deaths of 20 first graders and 6 educators. Obama said families who lost loved ones turned their grief into action that culminated in part earlier this summer when President Biden signed the first major gun safety bill in nearly 30 years. Survivors of the deadly Club Q shooting in Colorado Springs are sharing their stories. Michael Anderson, who was bartending at the time of the November shooting, testified before a House committee focused on threats against the LGBTQ community. Anderson urged lawmakers to take action to ban assault weapons, like the one used in the shooting. A gunman opened fire inside the club last month, killing 5 people and injuring more than a dozen others. Former President Trump may be losing steam among Republican primary voters, Rick Hoschel reports.
A new poll from the Wall Street Journal shows Florida Governor Ron DeSantis leading Trump by 14 points in a hypothetical 2024 GOP primary matchup, 52% to 38%. Meanwhile, a separate USA Today Suffolk University survey also found Republican voters favored DeSantis by double digits, 56 to 33%. Trump jumped into the race for the White House last month, but the former president has been blamed by members of his own party for the GOP's disappointing performance in the midterm elections.
You're listening to the latest on NBC News Radio.
The feast is on at Whole Foods Market. Get your animal welfare certified premium spiral sliced bone-in ham for just $5.39 per pound with Prime through December 25th while supplies last. Shop in-store or online. Terms apply.
And let's go ahead and take a look now to Alternative Talk weather outlook for Wednesday. What was the mostly cloudy skies? Then gradually becoming sunny later on this afternoon. High temperatures around 40, 41 degrees. Tonight, partly cloudy skies, low temperatures dropping down to freezing, 32 degrees. For Thursday and for Friday, more sunshine expected. High temperatures, not any warmer, in the low 40s, with low temperatures through the overnight in the upper 20s to low 30s, with a chance of rain and snow mix beginning on Saturday and running through the weekend. Highs of around 40.
The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers.
Welcome to the Remarkable Relationship Show with Misty Russell, where we find the wonder in your story. I will be your host for the next hour. I have over 35 years of experience applying the science of relationship systems to my practice of psychotherapy and leadership consulting. My intuitive skills allow me to bring clarity and vision to your challenges. I hope you will be surprised in the next hour.
Good morning. This is Mercy Russell with the Remarkable Relationship Show. My goal is to bring a fresh perspective to you on all things related to how humans develop their individual brilliance while navigating the excitement, stickiness, and resistance in their relationships. In my 40 years of working as a psychotherapist and consultant, I have been continually amazed at the ways in which people overcome challenges. I hope to share my experience and insights so you can find the magic in your relationships. So, good morning. I'm here today with my guest, Cynthia Lane. She's my teacher. And today, she has, you know, graciously agreed to talk with me today and to share with us her journey, and, you know, and hopefully we'll get to have a good conversation about life as we know it here on Earth in all its wonder. So, hello, Cynthia.
Hi, Mercy, how are you?
I'm good. Great to be here with you, always. So I just wanted to sort of start by just talking a little bit about how we met and how I know you. I'll just to tell the audience, and then we'll get to talk about that time of your life. But I met Cynthia in 1971 in Minnesota. She was teaching transcendental meditation, and I was a student at Carleton College and was encouraged by my dance teacher to learn TM, and Cynthia was my teacher. And, you know, the process of learning TM involves a couple of days, let's say. You know, I can't remember, five days. So I got probably, you know, spent that much time with her and then didn't see her again for many years. But I never forgot her name. And in the ensuing years, actually, what happened from my perspective, what happened next was that in 2017, I heard an interview of Cynthia on a website with Lauren Gailey or somebody, I can't remember who.
Gaffer Johnson, I think.
Oh, okay, yes, right. That it was a website where people with different spiritual interests were interviewed, but I recognized her name right away, so I listened to the interview and then I contacted her. And when I contacted her, she then reminded me of all the connections we had had in the years in between. That my I met my first husband. I started practicing TM in 1971, and in 1980, I continued to meditate and to take different classes and different courses. I went to an advanced course in Iowa where I met my first husband. And the way I connect, I had worked for a TM executive, which was a teacher of the cities with the cities program in New York City, and I had met a couple of other TM teachers there, people who had been with the movement from early on, we were all working at Business Week magazine. And this, my first husband, David Rivian, was a close friend of one of these, of Alan Cobb, who I worked with. So when I met David, we had this connection, and in the years following, I got to be very close with Alan and Mary. And Mary, you know, and I remember now when Cynthia reminded me that Mary told me that she and Cynthia, I think I told her the name of my teacher, and she said, oh, yes, Cynthia and I are very good friends. So by the time I contacted Cynthia in 2017, she knew something about me, right?
A little bit, you know, the barest outline.
The barest outline, right. And just to say, at that point in my journey with TM, and then and another spiritual teacher, I had never had a personal teacher, and that was not how TM worked. So after I was initiated, all my experiences, I sort of had to sort out myself. And when I met Cynthia again in 2017, she had gone down her path quite a ways, and it was just the perfect time for us to connect and for me to have a personal teacher. So that's my story of how we met. I would just really like to, you know, start with, now I'd just sort of like to kind of, I'd like to have you tell about your story and sort of just your background, you know, how you became a meditation teacher, and then how that part of the path has led to what you've done since.
Well, I think I was born a spiritual seeker, I guess you could say. Even when I was very young, I thought about God all the time, and didn't necessarily have any overwhelming clear experience, but God, the divine, was always very much in my awareness. I was attracted to people who wrote about spiritual experiences and so on. But I had no sense of, you know, that I might find a teacher or even that there were systems that would satisfy me or fulfill me. So my first 2 years of college were in Portland, Oregon at Reed College. And there, the people I met, my very best friends, were all spiritually oriented. And one friend in particular was deep into Zen meditation, which was probably my first opening to teachers from the East. But again, I had nobody to teach me about anything. I could read or we could talk or something like that. And then in 1966, I left Greek College and went down to San Francisco at the height of the whole Haight Ashbury flower child universe. And I went to San Francisco State, and absolutely, I think, every spiritual teaching you could ever want to encounter, and psychological, you know, kind of new age psychological technologies and stuff like that. Everything was around. It was such a big garden of possibilities. It was hard to choose. The first person that made a really deep impression on me was a beautiful, beautiful man named Meher Baba, M-E-H-E-R, who some people considered an avatar. He had been in silence for a long, long time.
Can you just tell our audience what an avatar is? Not everyone might know that term.
Well, he's supposed to be an incarnation of divinity.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
But all I knew about was that I was very attracted to him. That was my first introduction to the idea of a spiritual guru or teacher. And what he basically taught was love, just love, 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 love. And I understood the kind of love he was talking about. I knew I wasn't doing this. And but I wanted to, but he didn't offer a technology, so to speak, and, you know, a path, a teaching that could take you there, you know, to that place. So during that time, that was the time when Maharishi was first becoming well-known. A couple of friends of mine had learned, very good friends, had learned transcendental meditation, and they loved it. And so I decided that I would learn it. And at that time, this would have been in 1967, Maharishi was showing up personally, so